So this is the answer. Now, you may have some, there are two other possibilities, but they're linked. One is a Kanishtha who has some Madhyam tendency. Because it's not that you're Kanishtha one day and the next day you wake up and now you're Madhyam, just like that. There's obviously a progression, a gradual progression. So a person initially is purely Kanishtha, then gradually becomes more and more Madhyam, then fully Madhyam, and then more and more Uttama. So you may have a Kanishtha Madhyam who may have many characteristics which are not very good. But still they may have a little Madhyam tendency, so they'll preach a little. One example that I heard, which I thought was very good, there was one devotee, but then he left. We use the term bloop. You know the term? Prabhupada said bloop means the sound that a rock, like a pebble makes, or a small rock. If you drop it into a bucket of water, it goes bloop. And bloop. So that is what it's like when a devotee falls from Krishna consciousness into Maya. So there was this one devotee and he blooped, unfortunately. So what was he doing? This was movement. He got into some bad habits again, unfortunately. So he would go to the public bars and drink. So he was there one day and one fellow walked in. And the fellow sat down next to him. And they started talking. And this other fellow said, oh, what have you been doing? And this little bit spiritual discussion arrived. A little bit. After all, what better to discuss over a pint of beer and religion? You'll come up with many bright ideas. So somehow, some little discussion arose. It wasn't very advanced, but it was something. And so this ex-devotee, fallen devotee we should say, he said, well actually yes, I used to practice Krishna consciousness. And the other chap, he had some mild interest, so he asked, oh, what's it all about? So then the discussion got going. And a week later, the other chap joined the temple. So, here you have someone who's Kanishtha, or even less, not really Kanishtha, borderline. At best, Kanishtha. But because there's a little Madhyam spirit, then he manages to help someone by explaining a little bit about Krishna. Then you have someone, like take, well, let's just take Srila Prabhupada, who is Uttama, but he's preaching. Now, Uttama doesn't mean oblivious, for example, to your spiritual master. So in the case of Prabhupada, his spiritual master told him, you preach. So Prabhupada didn't say, well, look, I'm just too busy being absorbed in this very elevated consciousness of seeing myself like this, unable to preach, and the others as not needing preaching. Prabhupada said yes. So then, without compromising his position as an Uttama, he accepted the attitudes of a Madhyam Adhikari. So now when a Madhyam Adhikari preaches, then many people become devotees. When a Kanishtha, who's a little Madhyam, preaches, then someone may become a devotee. They may not also. But when an Uttama devotee preaches, accepts the attitudes of the Madhyam and preaches, then you see Krishna consciousness spread in a huge way. Because he's on that platform. And he has that connection with the Lord. So immense potency. So therefore we may struggle to keep ourselves Krishna conscious, but Prabhupada made millions of people Krishna conscious. So this is Uttama accepting the role of Madhyam, not coming down, but just accepting that role with the same incredible potency of the pure transcendental energy of the Lord. So these are just some variations on the theme. But the Uttama who's not acting Madhyam, he won't really influence people to become Krishna conscious. So, if you go down to the bottom of page 2, say, halfway down the last paragraph. In other words, this partiality of the Madhya is a natural feature of the Madhya, the middle class devotee's nature. He'll naturally feel like that. And he'll naturally be selective. And the Lord, just consider how elevated is the position of the Madhyamadika. The Lord becomes subservient and allows his mercy. It's not that Krishna has no mercy. He is the reservoir of everything, including mercy. But he will let his mercy flow after that of the Madhyam devotee. So he gives the Madhyam devotee power of attorney, actually. In fact, to give his mercy. And if the Madhyam thinks, no, I won't give this person. So Krishna says, fine, no problem. Not that you have to. But if the Madhyam says, well, I'll give it to this person, Krishna says, fine, you give it. So that power of attorney. So in other words, the Madhyam Adhikari is very close to Krishna. It's not a small thing to be a qualified Madhyam Adhikari. So now, the cause of that mercy is that the devotee has bhakti. Kanishta, Madhyam, Uttama. It means that bhakti is developing more and more. So when bhakti is fairly substantially manifest, but not fully, then a natural characteristic of that bhakti is that the devotee just feels like giving it, feels like helping people. So that because the devotee has bhakti, the devotee is now giving it. And of course, without the devotee having bhakti, there's no possibility of other people getting bhakti from him or her. So bhakti is causing bhakti, actually. The bhakti in the heart of the Madhyam devotee is causing the other people to get bhakti. Do you follow that? Yeah? So therefore, bhakti is causeless. Materially. But it's not that the devotee, Madhyam Adhikari, is like a robot who's giving out bhakti. The devotee is thinking, shall I give it to this person or that? How shall I give it? Who shall I give it to? So bhakti is also, bhakti devi is also, as Krishna is doing, bhakti devi is also becoming subservient to the devotee, while simultaneously inspiring the devotee, but allowing the devotee to give her mercy according to how the devotee wants to. So I hope you followed all of that. It's very interesting. And if you think about it, you'll see that it actually makes a lot of sense. So now let us just consider a couple of...
The bhakti is developing in the devotee's heart.
Yeah.
Also, it is reversible, like in the sense that the devotee falls down.
Okay.
So that means the level of bhakti also.
Oh, yes. Bhaktivinoda Thakur gives a description that when a person gets bhakti, it actually means that bhakti devi enters the devotee's heart. It's not just an impersonal energy of devotion, you know, emotion, but it means that bhakti devi is personally present. So, if we commit offenses like tonight, you're going to hear about devotee relationships. And unfortunately, well, maybe I'll be able to get a separate. I may not, so unfortunately. So, I think they're going to act out a few devotee relationships which may be like improper, offensive. So, if you offend a devotee, or if you offend Krishna, or if you offend something to do with devotional service like your beads, you just drop them on the ground. Or anything to do with devotion, your books, if you let them fall on the ground, your Prabhupada's books, like this. Or if you abuse a devotee or don't do a duty you're meant to do, any of these things. So these are offenses to bhakti, personally, bhakti devi. It's not just an offense to some invisible, maybe invisible, but just some like intangible energy. It's an offense to the presiding deity of bhakti. So bhakti devi, who's within your heart, may withdraw to some degree. she may step out. And we're going to discuss this as we go on, actually. But the possibility exists of Bhakti Devi withdrawing her mercy and Krishna withdrawing whatever he may be giving in reciprocation.
I'm trying to understand that the power of attorney is moving to the Madhyama Bhakta.
Yeah.
And maybe at least if they're in the Madhyama spirit, like which is always all around the world trying to distribute Krishna consciousness.
Yeah.
So they're in that spirit of giving Krishna consciousness to everyone, or even discriminately. But we see sometimes we may even share compassion or something with someone, but they don't accept the party, or they're not conscious. What is the reason? The Madhyama is still giving if they want to.
How do they? You may give, or the Madhyama chooses to give or not give. It's not that he is so intelligent that he automatically knows who will take, but he'll try. If someone looks like they might accept, he'll try. If someone is really anti, then the devotee won't try, generally. Or he may try in a tricky way, you know, in an undercover way, he may try. But the thing is, they may accept or not. And that is essentially up to them. And there are other things. There are other things also. But in principle, you can say that it's up to them to accept or not. Yeah. So, and there are other parts. We'll come to that shortly.
As I understand it, the conclusion of the discussion is that Krishna himself does not distribute the message.
Right.
But now what happens when Krishna is occupying the position of the devotee, like say Chaitanya Mahaprabhu?
Yeah. Then he's a Madhyamadhikari. He's effectively he's that. He may be whatever. He may be an Uttama, if he's an ordinary, like a Jiva. He may be God. But when he's acting as a Madhyam, then he's acting as a Madhyam. And effectively, his function is like that. Yeah. So Lord Chaitanya is God, and he's giving mercy. But he's not taking the position of God. He's taking the position of the devotee. And at least when he's doing his Sankirtan movement, he's taking the position of the Madhyamadhikari. So he is functioning like that. And if you tell him, no, you're God, he'll say, no, I'm not. Because effectively, he's actually accepting consciousness. Okay.
Can you explain a little bit on the spontaneous love of God?
We'll come to that. Step by step. We haven't come to shredding yet.
You're saying when the devotee falls.
Yeah.
And you, like Bhakti's taken. Yeah. But then what happens to the spontaneous is that they remain something he wants to.
Yeah.
Is that
okay?
Also?
So the seed remains. Generally the seed remains. I don't know if you caught that. If someone falls down, does that mean that Bhakti Devi abandons them altogether? Not exactly. Not exactly. The seed remains. But even in that state, we're going to discuss tomorrow actually about this, if someone falls down. Then they may do the same chanting they used to do and try, but they just can't get into it. They just can't get anything out of it. That chanting which they used to enjoy, it's a struggle. Because bhakti is not so much manifest, perhaps only in the seed form, due to offences. So let's just carry on. Now there is a category of thing, and if I can find it, I'll tell you where to look. Okay, so I'll just explain very briefly about this other point in this regard. Somewhere here, he talks about... Oh, here it is, page 3, second paragraph. That certain things... Certain types of karmas, this is at the bottom of the second paragraph on page 3. Certain karmas, certain material activities, if they're performed in a certain way, nishkam, without real personal motivation, they may act as a door to bhakti. Now, what does this mean? A door. I'll give you the idea. I'll try to give you the idea. Take vegetarianism. Now, this is material piety. This is a very nice form of material piety. But because it's material, and therefore it falls into, say, category number one, that it will generate material good fortune in the future if you become vegetarian now. In the future, you will enjoy certain results as the karmic reactions to that pious activity of giving up meat eating. So, you're vegetarian. Now, you may hear that the Hare Krishna devotees are vegetarian. And you think, oh, very nice. The Hare Krishna devotees are vegetarian. They must be good people. So let me go and meet them. So then you go and meet them. And when you meet them, then you get the association of devotees and then the Majjhimadikari's influence and so on. So then you may become a devotee. So that vegetarianism, material piety, has acted as a door, although it hasn't caused the bhakti. Actually, the association that you got when you met the devotees, that caused the bhakti. But it acted as a door. And other things, you know, like abortion, anti-abortion. The devotees are anti-abortion, and there are many ordinary people who are anti-abortion. They hear, oh, the Hare Krishna devotees are anti-abortion, and they think, oh, good, let me go and associate with them. So then they may become devotees. You get the idea then? You all know Mother Archavigraha? You know her? Yeah? Very nice devotee. Well, I remember when she was becoming a devotee, she was vegetarian. She was a, what do you call it?
Vegan.
Vegan. For 12 years. Means no dairy products. Strict vegetarian. No dairy products. So it's different from us. And, you know, very like rigid. Very rigid. So, after some time, she heard about Hare Krishna. And she heard, oh, the Hare Krishna devotees are vegetarians. So she thought, oh, that's nice. They must be nice people. Let me go and meet them. So she did. And I remember her coming to Mull District and gradually getting into it more and more. So it acted as a door. Now, what happened was, in her case, that she came up for the Sunday feast. And, of course, our Sunday feasts in Durban are not bad. I mean, they're very nice. I take that. just take it out of the ether. It's out of the ether altogether. It was not sick. So they're very nice. But in some temples where they're not so successful, you could say, and they're not so many hundreds of people coming, so they cook a smaller Sunday feast. So sometimes they cook more opulent Sunday feasts. And in Muller's Drift, that was the case. It was deep fried everything. Everything had cream and curd and sugar, everything. Well, anyway, it was something like that. So it was really, you know, quite an extravagant, rich feast. So here's Mother Archavigraha, the vegan. No dairy products, just the bare minimum to survive and, you know, something like that. And here's the Sunday feast. And Mother Archavigraha thought, what? These people may be vegetarian, but I can't be vegetarian like this. This is crazy. So she actually, that initial sort of interest which was aroused became a little dampened. Anyway, we're going to talk about how these things may be doors, but at the same time, they may have their adverse effects at the same time. So, being a vegetarian does not mean that vegetarianism is not going to generate bhakti in and of itself. But it may be a door. It may also not be a door. Like in her case, she thought, well, these people are vegetarian, but this is ridiculous. So I'm not going to have anything more to do with these people. So it was both a door But then it was also opposed to Krishna consciousness, more or less simultaneously. So anyway, these are some interesting considerations. Then, a few points about bhakti and how nice it is. Where's our... Can you wipe this up? Oh, we're getting into the blackboard.
Green
bottle. Okay, we'll just wind this up. We'll just conclude this chapter. He makes the point that bhakti is much easier than other processes like karma gyan and yoga. Now, you may not be so interested in karma gyan and yoga, but 400 years ago in India they were very important subjects to the people. And in principle, they are very important anyway. So, karma basically means material activity, or in this context, materialistic religious activity. And gyan means speculative knowledge or a very disciplined, impersonal type of spiritual practice. And yoga means mysticism, involving physical exercises like hatha yoga is part of the mystical yoga process. So, bhakti is not dependent on, I mean not entirely dependent on, faith even, or, oops, wait a minute, anyway, purity. I got these out of order. It's also not dependent on expertise in doing whatever is involved. So, some references. I'm just referring actually to some of our verses here. Let's just see which ones. Well, as far as purity of conditions, like cleanliness, at the bottom of page 4. Bottom of page 4. In chanting the name of the Lord, there's no restriction concerning place, time, purity, and so on. So this is actually number 2. Number 2 should be number 1. I mean, in terms of how they're appearing here. So what this means is, even if you're not so clean, this is purity, you're not very clean, but you can still be Krishna conscious. Doesn't mean that you should just be, you know, some sort of, as they say, dirty slob, and think you can just be Krishna conscious. But if it happens, and you are caught in a position and you're not clean, you can still be fully Krishna conscious. There are many examples of that. One very good one in Chaitanya Charitamrita. The day after Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya became a devotee, preached to by Lord Chaitanya. The very next morning, Lord Chaitanya came to see him and wake him up. And Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was asleep, and Lord Chaitanya shook him and he woke up. And Lord Chaitanya had some Jagannath Mahaprasad. He said, "Here, eat this." The devotees would say that about Jayananda. Have you heard of Jayananda? A devotee in America, he died about 20 years ago. He would do that. He'd be very busy working on the Rathiatrika till midnight. And he'd just get fired up, find some maha, and go and wake the devotees up. They'd just wake up and he'd say, "Here, take this." So Lord Chaitanya did the same thing. He woke up Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, and Sarvabhauma just sort of didn't know what was going on. And Lord Chaitanya said, "Here, eat this." And Sarvabhauma said, But I need to have my bath first and put on clean cloth. Lord Chaitanya said, "No, don't worry about it, just eat it." And so he did. And so now that is not considered defective in bhakti. But in like karma kandiya, if you're trying to do some ritualistic sacrifice and you're not in the most clean and pucker condition, then it has a very direct effect on the potency of what you're doing. And Lord Chaitanya himself said in Shikshastika in the second verse that chanting of the holy names is not dependent on anything. There are no hard and fast rules. You just chant. Then, let's see. Faith. Let's just have a look here. Oh, this is an interesting point. Let's see. Faith. This is actually something which is not mentioned here so much, but it's described in Nectar of Devotion. There are five particularly important activities in devotional service. Any of you know those? Yes, that. So how does it go? Sadhu Sangha Namakirtan Bhagavat Shravan Matura Vas Sri Mutir Shradayasevan Sadhu Sangha Association of Devotees Namakirtan Chaitanamitam Bhagavat Shravan Hearing Srimad Bhagavatam Matura Vas Living on Matura or a holy place where the deity is, in other words, and Sri Mutir Shradayasevan, serving the deity, deity worship. So Lord Chaitanya explains that these five, or any one, or two, or three, or whatever, that these five, or even any one, if they're performed, even without faith, but without offenses also, then they are capable of immediately bringing you to the level of bhava. So an example of that is... And Bilba Mangal Thakur. He was actually quite a degenerate. He was very, very sinful, indeed. But he somehow got the inspiration to become a devotee. So he went to Vrindavan and he chanted. He did these things. And he didn't really have so much faith, he didn't know much about it. But he did it and he was not offensive. So he very quickly came to the level of bhava. Then, let's see, how about, or regarding purity, another very interesting example regarding purity is the example of Vishwamitra. He performed Hatha Yoga, which is part of the mystic yoga process, for something like 40,000 years or 30,000 years or something. And then Indra became worried, so he sent one heavenly society girl. Society girl is a very nice way of saying prostitute. bring him down. See, he was doing his Hatha Yoga with his eyes closed. He didn't even see her. All that happened was he heard her ankle bells jingling, and he fell down. And then he got married to her, and the whole thing developed from that. But the actual fall down came simply when he heard the ankle bells. Then after however long, he realized, wow, I fell down. So then he left home again. Then he went and did the same thing, this time underwater, thinking at least, people, it's going to be harder for people to get at me. But then he was doing the same thing underwater again for thousands of years, and he opened his eyes and he saw two fish mating, and he fell down again. But in bhakti, even if a person, if you look at the bottom, where are we? The bottom of page 5. Page 5. Api chet sudaracharo ajite mam ananyava sadur eva samantavya samyad vyavasatohi sattva. So here, if you know this verse, chapter 9, verse 30, Bhagavad Gita, Krishna's